Again, it's good to be here with you all on this meeting. As you may be aware, the council has been involved in some extensive flow study. We've had flow committees for years. Now we've got a major study with a consultant doing extensive research on cotton flow, cotton logistics, and see how we can do a better job being competitive with some of the foreign growths of cotton. But prior to the advent of that major study, council staff undertook a survey of cotton warehouses in order to give us a kind of a baseline of where we are now with cotton coming into the warehouse, cotton going out of the warehouse, how warehouses store cotton. And our goal in this study was not to say this is a best practice or this is a bad practice at the warehouse, but we're trying to get a reference, much like Tommy does with the Jennings survey, just to see what people are doing in their warehouses at this time. We took an approach of looking, you know, we pretty know what happens with the bale whenever it comes into the warehouse, the physical bale of cotton. And we know that warehousemen use electronic warehouse receipts and quite a bit of computers to keep up with the cotton in their warehouse, but we didn't have a real good understanding of how that was working and how those two systems interface. So we tried to group that together so we could get an idea of what they're doing with the physical bale of cotton as well as the electronic information that goes into the warehouse and out and helps them manage their cotton system. So our sample, you couldn't say that we had a representative sample from the standpoint we want to make sure those different practices were represented. However, the 34 warehouses that we actually interviewed, either by phone or in person, accounted for about 3.4 million bales of cotton, or about 15% of the cotton that's storage capacity in the U.S. Now, beyond that, because with some of the larger warehouses, and in order not to divulge who was involved in the survey or what their position was, again, in some cases, some of these warehouses had multiple entities, so we're confident we had way over probably 85 to 90% of the warehouses actually represented in the survey, even though our numbers were a little bit smaller. And again, we tried to make sure that the warehouseman agreed to provide this in a confidential manner so that it couldn't come back in some form to cause them some heartburn. Warehouse ownership, you know, who owns the warehouse in the United States? Well, at this time, again, and for our purposes, we tried to make sure we covered all the bases and identified six different types of ownership, going from growers through a cooperative or a stock arrangement, gin warehouses, merchant warehouses, and tried to get a cross-section of all of these different types of groups and all these different ownership structures. We also wanted to know just, you know, how long have these folks been in business? Well, in one case, one of these companies has been in the cotton warehousing business for well over 100 years. At this location that we interviewed, there were several others that had that length of longevity in their operations, but not necessarily at the warehouse that was chosen for the interview site. And again, some of these had not been in operation very long. You see, there's a couple that was less than 6 years, but most of them have been in the cotton warehousing business for a fairly lengthy time and know what it means to store a bale of cotton and how to get it in and out of their warehouse operation. On the electronic document side of it, one of the questions we wanted to know was just, you know, how do you handle that information? And again, from the standpoint of depending on where in the country you're operating, different practices are involved. We talk about the deposition holder. In other words, when a warehouseman creates a warehouse receipt, somebody is sent that receipt as a deposition holder, and that person has the responsibility of turning that receipt into a real valid warehouse receipt. In a lot of cases, that's the last time the warehouseman knows who actually owns that bale of cotton until it comes back to him on a shipping order. So between that creation date of that receipt and the return date of that receipt, in a lot of operations, the warehouseman really doesn't have a clue as who actually possesses that bale of cotton that he's storing. we looked, divided those warehouses in three types of operations. One of them was basically what we identified as a country warehouses. And these, they primarily got their cotton from gins, and on occasion they might receive a few bales from another gin, but most of their cotton came strictly from cotton gins. Another type of operation was what was a country hybrid. Again, a majority of their cotton came from cotton gins, but a significant amount of their cotton came from other warehouses in the form of transshipments or consolidations of shipments prior to being shipped to a textile mill, either domestic or overseas. And then we also included a couple of port warehouses in the survey. And again, one of these was actually at a port on the coast, and another one was at an interior port or an intermodal point, which is a gathering place for a lot of cotton that's bound and put into containers before it goes overseas. So we tried to make sure we had some representation from all of these groups, but really we spent a lot more time on the country warehouses than we did on, and the country hybrids than we did on the port warehouses. We just wanted to make sure they were represented. And as you can see from the standpoint of that guy that gets a hold of that bale of cotton first, the country warehouses, that represents 99% of his cotton. Almost all of it's either coming from a gin or a group of gins that he has a business relationship. The country hybrids, again, in that case, over half of their cotton, even though there may be transshipping and consolidating shipments, is coming directly from gins. The port warehouses, yeah, they receive a few bales, but really not enough to measure. We also wanted to know, how long are you operating? When do you start receiving cotton? Well, again, we could probably go on, and if we'd gone a little further south, got a date even before August the 3rd. But in this case, last year, starting August the 3rd, for the first bale at a warehouse, goes on up to October the 25th for the first bale at a warehouse as you move north across the cotton belt. And at that time, you see that some warehouses were finishing up while other folks were just getting started. And one of the things we wanted to know is, how long were they actually in the process of receiving bales? Ranged anywhere from a month and a half to a little over 5 months for one warehouse that had a season that started early and went on up into spring, and he was actually getting bales of cotton from a gin. So that could be quite extensive. But on average, it was a little over 3 months from the time that first bale was received at a warehouse till the last one came in. Number of bales stored, again, these were fairly substantial operations. Most of them were 100,000 plus, at least their license capacity. But for that, we wanted to look at how long it's stayed in their warehouse during the year. And we just took an arbitrary number of, and again, applied it across the cotton belt, so we didn't make any differentiation by their ginning season. But just saying an arbitrary date of May 31st, again, they had about 22,000 bales on average in their warehouse. And the median number, though, if you look at some of these warehouses, drops down considerably. So about half of these warehouses that had a lot more cotton at the start of the season only had about 6,500 bales left. Some of the warehouses we surveyed, one comment was, well, and this was in March, I couldn't even make up one shipping order now with the amount of cotton I've got left in my warehouse. It's all been shipped. So again, there's quite a variation depending on where you're at in the country and what type of warehouse operation you're dealing with. The average time a bale is stored, warehousemen were pretty reluctant to give us this information. They said, if I give you that information, all you have to, you can calculate what my income is for this warehouse, but we were able to tease that out of them, and you can see that was a little bit less than half a year from that standpoint. But again, we feel that that's gives us a good baseline of what warehousemen are doing. We want to know how they typically arrange cotton in their warehouse based on where it's coming from. Most warehousemen said, it's the first available slot. Whatever's closest to the door, that's where I stick that bale of cotton as it comes in my facility. Some of the gin warehouses said, you know, if we have more than one gin, we're going to segregate those bales by gins. This is not universal practice, but it is in some cases. And then some warehousemen said, we're going to segregate them by PBI numbers. We're going to keep those in sequential order so that it makes us easier for us to keep up with those bales. What we did not find very much of was warehouses that used either a cotton marketing association to base their stores, or there was a little bit of marketing pools where those pools were segregated in their warehouse. Did have a couple of warehousemen said they do segregate by shippers because before the season starts, they make sure they know who owns or who's forward contracted their cotton, and it makes it a lot easier to manage their bales as it leaves their facility. How you stack a bale of cotton. You know, historically in the Mid-South, a lot of cotton was stacked cordwood, and to find anybody that still stacks cordwood is kind of difficult. Most warehouses have either gone to block stacking or row stacking. And while this chart graph indicates that block stacking is the dominant method, at least by the number of warehouse surveys, again, those warehouses that row stack cotton tend to be a lot larger operations, so in that case, they would account for a larger number of the bales if we went back and adjusted for that storage practice. Again, we do have identified one warehouse that actually uses racks to store cotton, and they've been doing this for a number of years. So you can see that there's all different types of methods. Building utilization, again, we asked the warehouseman, and it's not in this survey, but talking about manpower and equipment and so forth, how they utilize that. Building utilization, you know, why would you stack it block versus row stacking? Well, it comes down in most cases just to the fact you can store a lot more bales of cotton. Matter of fact, it takes about a foot less to store cotton, a square foot less per bale if you use block stacking. Now, that's all well and good from the standpoint of getting cotton arranged in a warehouse. Where it does create problems is getting cotton out of warehouses. And those people, again, we've got two slides. This first slide addresses block stacking. And in that case, you see that over on the red bar over there is we have a lot of warehousemen that are touching bales of cotton 15 or more times from the time it comes into the warehouse to the time it leaves in a shipment to get it adequately stored, even though some of them do it quite efficiently. And you can see in a row stacking operation, there's a lot fewer touches. And again, even those red bars in this case are warehousemen that periodically go back in their warehouse during the year and reorganize those bales. So they're actually could get by with a lot fewer touches on a bale of cotton, but they elect to do that just to keep their bales in orderly fashion as they ship. Order management, again, this is just how fast do bales, can they fulfill a shipment? And I'm going to click on to the next slide just to say there's more to come. Again, this is part of an ongoing flow study. This information has been shared with the folks at Wilbur Smith for their flow study so that they can do some additional number crunching on it, as well as the folks that they have subcontracted with at Texas A&M, the Cotton Economics Department there. And I see my red light's flashing, so thank you very much.